Of the Pack
Podcast. The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to Pulse of the Pack. It's been a while. And I know it's been a while because the last time we talked, the Packers were under 500. They have climbed back to 500 with two consecutive wins over the Philadelphia Eagles and Houston Texans, respectively. I was even in the house for one of those games. So for everybody that wants to find someone to thank for this victory, forget Aaron Rodgers, forget Jordy Nelson, forget about HaHa Clinton Dix and Julius Peppers. I am taking full credit for that win over the Houston Texans. Join with me, as always, is my co-host, Jason Perrone. Jason, I haven't heard your voice in a while. How the hell are you?
Some would say you're a lucky man based on that particular fact, Jacob, but I am doing fine. It's a winter wonderland here in the great state of Minnesota. And I say the great state of Minnesota because every time the Vikings lose a game, this state becomes a little bit more and more greater to one myself. But I have to ask you, since I kind of pimped it out a little bit on Twitter when we set the show up, what was it like? I know you were at the Seahawks playoff game in 07, if I recall correctly. So you've been at a game like that where it snowed before. It's a snow globe. I have never had that experience. So kind of walk us through that. Tell us what it was like. Obviously, the Packers won, so that makes it all the more fun. But what's it like when it's just coming down all day?
Well, first of all, I would not be one of those people that thinks I'm lucky that I haven't heard you in a while, so I'll start there. Secondly, I don't mean to ruin your point, but I was not at that Seahawks game, but I can still answer most of your question. It was more of a we got in Green Bay at about 8:30 and started tailgating. We had a tent, but there was still some snow and some wind, so we had our taste of the elements there. And once we got into the stadium, it was more of like the snow wasn't sticking, so I couldn't brush the snow off of me. It was actually much more like rain. And as it kept going, it was getting in my face. I'm rubbing stuff off my face the whole time. But, you know, I took someone with me to the game, and it was her first time at the stadium, her first professional football game in general. And I told her that even though it's going to be cold and snowy and she'll probably hate it, this is actually the best way to get your first experience because – when you talk about Lambeau Field, you know, you talk about the frozen tundra, you talk about the ice bowl, you talk about the weather, the snow, the elements, just for lack of a better term, a meatball term of football weather, and that is what this was. It was a battle of will from both the fan base and the players on the field, and I can be the first to tell you, and I know that everyone around me will be willing to vouch, I was jacked up for that game. It's pretty rare that I attend a game as a fan because of some of the opportunities I've gotten. So when I do get to attend a game as a fan, my voice was trashed on Monday morning, just completely gone. I was screaming in the air. Jordy Nelson's reception on the last touchdown drive where he mossed the cornerback for the Texans was phenomenal. And I screamed a phrase of let's go, and there was another word in the middle that I'll let you guys figure out on your own, but I absolutely loved it. The weather games are always my favorite ones. One of my favorite clips I talk about from the Packers pregame video and Jason, you'll see it this week as you're going to the game against the Seahawks, if I am correct on that still, and that is Eddie Lacy. It is a shot of him and his dark visor, so you can't see his face, but you see the breath coming out of his helmet. And I always appreciate Lambeau a little bit more when you can see your breath, because it's the frozen tundra, and I love it. I got goosebumps just thinking about it right now, but weather games are so much better. It was great. I got nothing but good things to say about my experience this week. And the best part of it was we have two games to recap, because the Monday night game 2 weeks ago kind of put us at a disadvantage. We had some scheduling conflicts, so we couldn't recap. So we got to do both. And let's start, Jason, by grabbing a fork and eating some crow, because we both predicted losses by large margins against the Philadelphia Eagles. So my question first is, how surprised were you that they came out on top in that game?
So, yes, we got to eat some crow. Now, I picked the Eagles for two reasons that really were not probably the best reason to pick against the Packers. The first one was because they had lost three games in a row and looked awful doing it. And so I'd lost my confidence in the team and wasn't going to pick them simply because I wasn't going to make myself look like a fool if they lost again and went out and played like they had been playing. So we didn't know, obviously, that that team was going to show up in Philadelphia. The other thing, too, is, and I think I mentioned this in the week leading up to that game because we did do a show after Washington, was I just don't feel like – I feel like there's certain venues that the Packers don't play well in, although – at this point now, they've won three in a row in Philadelphia, so I think we can squash that narrative, which I think I might have been one of the last few who's still stung by the whole 4th and 26 thing, which was hilarious to me that they put that up on the scoreboard prior, because it's like, how many years are you going to hold on to that? I get that it was a significant thing, and a lot of football fans still remember it, and we all remember iconic plays like the catch and Franco Harris's immaculate reception, and some of those things never die. But yeah, that was a great look, and especially when he lost the game. So a little rib there at the Eagles for the pregame there. But I was kind of surprised. I mean, I think we texted a little bit during the game, you know, because I wanted to check in on your dad, Jacob, because I know that obviously your dad's an Eagles fan. But, you know, it was good to see them show up in a road game, play a completely different type of football than we'd seen the previous 3 weeks. It was almost like they kind of saved it up for that game because they really put it together and played really well, specifically Devontae Adams, who had another outstanding game against the Eagles. So, you know, at the time it was surprising because I had not seen quality football from the Packers. But now after that game and then last week, and I get that the Eagles are struggling and maybe they kind of peaked a little too soon and we got a little too high on them early in the year. And the Texans have Brock Osweiler, quarterback. And I, as a former, or I'll always be a Sun Devil, but as a former ASU student who also – went to a lot of ASU football games where Brock Osweiler was the quarterback and didn't play very well, I can attest that the Houston Texans are probably in for a long road for a while until his contract makes sense for them to go in a different direction. But surprising, yes, but definitely for good reasons. It was good to see him get the both wins, but if we're focusing specifically on Philadelphia, that was the first one to get them off the schneid, so that was awesome.
Yes, it was, and even more awesome for me because, as you mentioned, I live with a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Not a whole lot of banter during the game because he works at night, so he was gone by halftime. The game was still relatively competitive, and to be honest with you, I wasn't expecting the Packers to really hang on in the second half as that game progressed, but as it kept going, I'm like, holy crap, they really are going to win this thing, and they just played different than they have. You know, Aaron Rodgers was phenomenal. The ball was out of his hand quick. The receivers were making plays after the catch. And Devontae Adams is a stud this season. And I really don't know how you can have any other assessment. Now, I use that term a little bit loosely because is Devontae ever going to be the star that they predicted him to be last year? No. But for the people that wanted him cut in favor of Jeff Janis, you guys are eating far more crow than we are for picking the Eagles to win this game because Jeff Janis has not really found his way on consistent playing time, and Devontae Adams has been arguably the Packers' best receiver, and I would have argued he is the Packers' best receiver before that game against the Houston Texans where Jordy Nelson reminded us he is still White Lightning, and he's still the Packers' best receiver. And I got to point out one other thing. If the Eagles are going to put 4th and 26 on the scoreboard, I wanted to know were they going to show a highlight of Michael Vick throwing an interception to Tremont Williams in the wild card playoff game in 2010? The answer, obviously, to there was not. Before that game started, during the week in his press conference, Aaron Rodgers actually got a lot of flack. He was called delusional by Pro Football Talk, and Jason, we've addressed that particular platform, and we won't go any further. But Aaron Rodgers basically said the Packers could run the table, and for those of you that aren't versed in what that means, that meant the Packers could win their last six games and finish the season 10-6. What I want to know is, what were your thoughts on comments? And mine were, I loved it, because number one, what the hell else is he supposed to say? Like, oh, no, we're going to, you know, really struggle here. And, you know, we've been struggling, so we're going to keep struggling. And, no, he's going to think that they can win the rest of their games. And the Packers, as much as you could say about the Mike McCarthy era, and there's been a lot of good and some bad, obviously, and we've discussed a lot of the bad this season, the team always seems to respond in these situations that they've been in. And I really do think that when Aaron Rodgers said that, he believed they could run the table. It shows an unwavering support of his teammates, and here's a big flashy buzzword for you guys. It shows leadership, which is something a lot of you idiots out there claim, and I don't mean all of you, but I mean a lot of idiots claim that he's not able to do that. And I think that's wrong, and I think that we can run the table thing, and couple that with his superb play in these last 2 weeks, that shows leadership, leading by example, and leading vocally. That is what my opinion was on his run the table comments. Jason, you're a little more bit of an upbeat lollipop than I am. What were your thoughts when Aaron Rodgers said, oh, no, we can run the table?
Well, by upbeat lollipop, I hope you're setting me up to be my typical self, which is maybe more of what people have come to expect from me on game day. When he said that, I was like, that's the most player speak comment that a guy could make. It was one of those things that players say in an interview or in the media, and you immediately say, okay, well, he has to say that, or of course he's going to say that. What else is he going to say? There wasn't any reason for me to believe, or for me to think anybody else would believe, that they'd run the table, because they were playing so badly at the time that, minus the Cleveland Browns, that I know that they get beat up on because they're the one example of teams that of a team that most anybody can probably beat, and the only NFL team right now that I think any other team probably could beat on any given day, that, you know, who are they going to take out? Who are they going to be able to outplay? Because they had just lost terribly to the Colts, and not blown out, but they got beat by the Colts at Lambeau Field. That was a terrible look. We all know a rodent took the cake that day, stole the stage from the Packers on their own home field, so that was awful. Then they get blown out in Tennessee. They look completely flat, and they just get trucked in Washington. So I thought it was ridiculous at the time, but, you know, like you mentioned, some of the platforms that we're done talking about, and I'm not going to mention it again because I agree with you. I think that we don't need to give them any more press, but these last two games, if nothing else, following those comments by Rodgers, pretty much put to rest any questions about whether he's committed, whether he can return to form, and whether he can be a leader on this team, regardless of whether it's the type of leader that others want to see. You know, we have to remember that just because you want somebody to run around and bang their fist on the table and bang their head against the wall and, you know, clash the cymbals and get everybody riled up doesn't mean that that's what works for the team. We're not in the locker room. We don't know what motivates these guys. And so, obviously, Aaron Rodgers kind of knows what he's talking about. There's a little bit of a different situation, but a couple of years ago when the Packers started 1-2 in 2014, you know, we all heard RELAX. I have a t-shirt that says it, that I still wear to this day, not as often because I'm in Minneapolis. Just not as many opportunities to wear a t-shirt. But if y'all remember from that point forward, the Packers season went a lot better than those first 3 weeks did. So I'm not saying that the Packers are definitely going to run the table, but at this point, I'm a lot more why not about it than I was when he first said it a couple weeks ago.
Moving forward a little before moving back, once they beat the Eagles 27-13, a relatively resounding victory on the road, did you believe they could beat the Houston Texans? Because I did, and I'll explain why, but did you believe that they were going to beat Houston once that Eagles game ended?
I think I doubted it for maybe a split second, but after looking at it and realizing who the quarterback was for Houston, it was going to be in Green Bay, and that they looked so much better in Philadelphia. And I'm like, a road win can really catapult you. I wasn't really doubting it all that much.
No, neither was I. And I thought that, you know, I expected the Packers to win, which was really the first time I expected them to win since they had played Indianapolis. Those of you that remember, you know, the Packers were coming off maybe their best loss of the season, if there is such a good thing, against the Atlanta Falcons, where they lost at the last minute. But they played well against a team that's supposed to be pretty good on the road. But I thought that they were set to beat the Houston Texans. Now, if you look into these two games, you're talking about a tale of two receivers that basically dominated the night. The Eagles game, I got to start here because it really was all about Davante Adams and maybe the signature play. If the Packers do run the table or find a way to make it into the playoffs, the Eagles game is going to be what they point to, and they may point to the throw and the catch for the second touchdown. Aaron Rodgers throws the ball into an impossible window. Davante Adams makes an incredible catch, and it gives the Packers a 14-7 lead at the time. And I bring this up both because it was a big play, and secondly, Jason, we've mentioned either myself or Zach Crew. Zach Crew says we're all the president in this club, but the president of being Team Devontae, and Devontae has definitely bounced back this season. He's been a very good player for the Packers, even in a quiet game. You go to the Texans game, you know, maybe the most excited the crowd got before the Jordy Nelson touchdown was Devontae's 60-plus yard catch and run that ended up only counting for 17 yards because he stepped out of bounds. But it was phenomenal, his play after the catch, even if it didn't count. That's just a player that we didn't see last year. You know, we talked about wherever Davante Adams catches the ball, that was where he went down, and that is not the case anymore. Adams has been a very good receiver for the Packers this season. That's what I bring up for the Eagles game. And then you go to the Texans game, it was all about Jordy Nelson. Jordy Nelson was the best receiver on the field, reminding us all that he is still Jordy Nelson, still a very good receiver. He made contested catches, kind of reminded me of James Jones a little bit in that regard. And he even had a little bit of swagger. He pointed first down right in front of Vince Wilfork, which there's nothing wrong with that. I've got no problem with players celebrating. You're just not used to seeing Jordy Nelson act like that as far as, you know, the guy who is gloating, showboating, whatever way you want to put it, celebrating. I don't have a problem with it. It's just you're not used to that. So, Jason, in a general sense, what is your breakdown of the two games as a whole? And then we'll go a little more in-depth.
So, I mean, we kind of talked about the Eagles game and how that whole thing went. I thought the offense kind of carried the day. The defense was still kind of trying to get their footing under them. You know, they made some plays. Carson Wentz had a hard time, although I think he's kind of regressed, and he kind of hit the rookie wall, as they say. So it was a little bit of good timing for the Packers to get the Eagles when they did. I think if they gotten them in the first quarter of the season, I don't know if they win that game, especially in Philadelphia, because the Eagles were looking pretty good for that first month. Julius Peppers ties Michael Strahan in that game for sack total, although we joked today that he should have been credited with having surpassed Michael Strahan, because Michael Strahan, in my opinion, is always going to have one sack too many to his credit. Those of you who remember the 2001 season know what I'm talking about. But that was just a back against the wall, needed to come up with a big-time effort on the road in a tough environment, regardless of whether the Eagles are good or not. That crowd is still tough to play in front of. The Packers have historically had their problems there. And like you said, Jacob, the story of that game was that second touchdown pass to Davante Adams. I literally sat there dumbfounded on my couch watching that game and just yelled, wow, three or four times. And my wife and my son come running into the room, curious of what just happened, and I showed the replay twice. And God bless my wife. She's not a huge football junkie, but she even appreciated the incredible throw and the great catch that that was. But that's the kind of thing, you know, like you said, is that can catapult a team, that can be a spark plug. So that was great to see. And then Houston was just a case of the Packers rising up and playing above the weather. You know, it's tough to play in that environment, even though you're at home, because you got snow on the ground. Like Randall Cobb said after the game, I think it was Cobb that said, it's tough because you got snow building up inside your, you know, underneath your cleats. So the arch of your foot is gone. It's hard to move around and maneuver around in there. But You got Jordy Nelson making great catches. He had a just monster day for the Packers. He was obviously the team's best player that day. Like you said, Tay Adams with a great catch and run. Unfortunately, not all of it counted, but just flashed that potential. And Rodgers just continuing to come back and bounce back and be the pro that he is. You know, it's switched around, whereas the defense carried the team a lot last year when the offense was struggling and the defense was supposed to be a big strength this season. We're now seeing it kind of return back to a little bit more of 2014, not quite to that level, but the offense is the story. And I think when the offense is the story of the Green Bay Packers, that's when everybody gets on board and gets excited, because then it's all about 12, his arm, and his being the focal point. And I think that's just something that lends itself to life being a little bit better for most people when that's the case. So that's kind of my over you know, big picture overview of those two games.
Well, first let me second with
God bless your lovely wife, Kelsey. Kelsey, I haven't seen you since last year, but I'm sure you're listening, and I'm sorry I won't be able to see you this week, but I appreciate you taking care of Jason when he's losing his mind there in the middle of an instant replay. But yeah, I mean, you know, you're talking about shouting, wow, 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 in the middle of a play, and that's something that became the norm when it was Aaron Rodgers, and a little less so, you know, the last year and a half or so, a lot less of those wow throws, wow catches. I mean, last year, obviously, like, the signature play that sticks out in my head other than the Hail Marys is, you know, Rodgers rolling right and just throwing a dart to James Jones in the corner of the end zone in Minneapolis. Great throw, great catch there. And that was about my only wow moment of the season for throws that Aaron made. And that throw to Devontae was another one this year. And you're right. You're talking about a team now where, no, the offense is not 2014. They don't have the big play threat on every down. You don't have the overwhelming confidence that they're going to score every time they touch the ball. But at the same time, the offense is – you know, for all the talk that we had early in the year about, you know, what is wrong with Aaron Rodgers, this is a guy that if the Packers were in a better position, you're talking about an MVP candidate. And obviously I'm not, you know, when it comes to MVP candidates, my short list, you know, you got Derek Carr, you've got Ezekiel Elliott, you've got Tom Brady, who seems to be in the discussion every year. But Aaron Rodgers would be on that short list if the Packers' record was like 9-3 instead of 6-6. Unfortunately, they are 6-6, and some of that is due to, you know, poor play from the quarterback position, but it's also a lot of other things. But a lot of good things coming from Aaron Rodgers in the last 2 weeks. And really, again, I don't mean to keep beating this dead horse, but that to me is what leadership is. You're rising to the occasion when your team needs you the most. Now, did Rodgers throw for 400 yards against the Houston Texans? No. But he made a lot of great plays when the team needed him to make them. This is why, in my opinion, you can't just read the box score and tell me who's having the best game or season, because, you know, Aaron Rodgers' stat line against the Texans is going to look pretty pedestrian. He threw for under 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, which is good, but that's not like, wow, oh my God, you know, Aaron Rodgers throwing for 404 touchdowns and no picks. But at the same time, he's playing very, very good football. The other thing that came from these two games is we finally have a rushing touchdown from someone other than Aaron Rodgers. And if you had Aaron Ripkowski as the Packers' first rushing touchdown this season, not by the quarterback, congratulations, you win. And I am convinced that you are lying. It's a running joke each week that the Packers hadn't had a rushing down, but that kind of leads into my next point. Not everything was sunshine and rainbows from these 2 weeks, Jason. And James Starks, we talked about him in the offseason. I was on the train of, you know, he's 30, and it felt like I was splitting hairs because he had such a good year last year as a screen back, as the scat back, or not scat back, that's a bad term for him, but, you know, the secondary back to Eddie Lacy, and I didn't want him back. I thought that they could draft a guy like Paul Perkins or Jordan Howard later, even though Jordan Howard's a bit of a different back. DJ Foster, who's now in New England. Granted, he hadn't contributed as much, but I thought they could have done some different things at the running back position, and they didn't. They stuck with James Starks, and James Starks is bad. I mean, I got no other terms for him other than every run he makes, it seems like he's bouncing to the outside, and there's holes that he's missing. Everybody wants to say, well, you know, the run blocking, this and that, but the run blocking isn't bad for Ty Montgomery and Christine Michael because those guys are averaging more yards per carry. I know that Ty Montgomery wears a receiver's number and number 88, and I know that Christine Michael just got here 3 hours ago, it feels like. But shouldn't those guys at this point be featured more than someone that literally right now, James Starks averages 2.4 yards per carry. Tom Brady averages 2.3 yards per carry, and nobody's going to mistake Tom Brady for Michael Vick. So my question to you, Jason, is should James Starks be nailed to the bench? And if so, my guy for the featured back is Ty Montgomery. I know he wears a receiver's number, and that looks weird, but he looks like the best running back on the roster right now. And in my opinion, damn the jersey number. That's what you got to go with. And that is what my solution right now to the running game is ride Montgomery, use Michael as your change of pace guy. And I know James Starks has the experience. I know he has the pass protection stuff down. This is where Edgar Bennett and Ben Sermons, the running backs coach, and some of these other guys have to coach these players up. And they have to get Montgomery and Michael ready because, quite frankly, James Starks on the field is not a threat anymore. That's my solution to the running game, if you will. Jason, do you have one? Do they stick with Starks? What do they roll with?
Well, a lot of good points coming from you. I agree with a lot of what you said. I was going to say the number. You mentioned the number a couple times on Ty Montgomery's jersey. That, you know, number be damned, like you said. Who cares? Absolutely. Ty Montgomery is the best back of any of the options. Now, obviously, back when we were doing the preseason show, we talked about some things to look for with the Packers this season. And we were talking about offense. One of the things that we talked about was the Cobra package. So that Ty Montgomery comes out of the backfield, I don't think is a surprise and wasn't even back then. But, you know, did you think back then that we would be talking about, especially in December, Ty Montgomery being the linchpin to the Packers running game? Because, like you said, if somebody picked Aaron Ripkowski to be the first Packers back other than Aaron Rodgers to score a touchdown this season, they're lying. I wouldn't believe that they thought Montgomery would be the leading rusher or the best running back in December. So it is Ty Montgomery. And I think that when he touches the football, good things happen. And that's both out of the backfield as a pass catcher and as a running back. You mentioned the run blocking. The run blocking for the Packers is not stellar. That's not what they excel at. They are pass blockers. There's a reason why the Packers have very good pass blocking offensive linemen. It's because they have Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback, because the passing game is always going to be the feature for the Packers as long as Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback and is playing at a high level. So I'm not saying you ignore run blocking, and I'm not saying that they can't be good at it, but when they let Josh Sitton go, they survived. But Josh Sitton was their best run blocker. And now the guys that they have out there are just not – that's not their forte. They're not known for being great blockers. So you mentioned Christine Michael and Montgomery getting more yards than Starks, and I think that has to do with confidence, vision, and just maybe ability at this point. I don't understand. I mean, the bottom fell out of James Starks pretty quickly because in 2014, I think it was 2 years ago, might have even been last year, but for some reason I'm thinking it was 2 years ago, but Starks, in his limited role, and they had Lacy all season, I think he was averaging closer to 5 yards a carry. So his average has dropped in half. It's like all of a sudden he turned 30, and the bottom just fell right out of the guy. I mean, he catches, you know, he takes the handoff out of the backfield, and not only does he not see the lane, he doesn't see the hole, he doesn't see the cutback, he doesn't see anything. He just takes the handoff and just stops. It's almost like he forgets that he's in live action. This isn't a drill. This isn't training camp. This isn't take the handoff and stop and go back and go through a dry run or go through a walkthrough. You know, it's really bizarre to me. I mean, Starks had his issues at the end of last year. We remember in December he was fumbling the ball. He fumbled in four straight games. Now he can't run the football at all. You know, I was okay back in the preseason with keeping him. Like, you know, you asked that question, Jacob. I was okay with keeping him because the Packers seem to make pretty good decisions with regard to personnel. So I was inclined to trust Green Bay and say, okay, if they're keeping James Starks over other options that they could have used to address the running back position, which included free agency, bringing somebody else in, you know, whatever at that time, that they knew what they were doing. I also like James Starks as a pass catcher. And that's where I thought he would be a bigger asset. And I think when he's done anything this season, which hasn't been much, it's been catching the ball out of the backfield. But he's just proven to be more of a liability and just so unproductive that I think it's, you know, you asked if it's time to staple him to the bench. I think it is. I mean, he doesn't play special teams. He's not going to all of a sudden start playing special teams. So I don't know. I don't think with a couple weeks left in the season, I don't think all of a sudden he's just going to kick it into gear. I think the Packers have to, you know, when they move into December football, most teams, and especially the Packers historically, if you look at what they do with their roster, they stick with the guys that they know. They stick with the guys that they like. You know, they might tinker around with some things, you know, in October, November, definitely in September where, you know, you saw a personnel group here, and then all of a sudden it was different in the next game. We've heard it 1,000 times. So-and-so was productive, so Mike McCarthy, of course, is going to keep him on the bench for the following week because it doesn't make sense. And so he tinkers around and tries to figure out what's the best matchup. Well, at this point, they're sticking with the guys that they know and with the guys that are good. I don't think Michael is quite there in terms of his knowledge of the offense, and obviously pass blocking is a big piece of that. So you're not going to see him all of a sudden get a ton of carries, but I do think that history will show Mike McCarthy comes up with really good game plans and kind of comes up with a really good game at crunch time when he needs to. And this is definitely one of those types of games coming up against the Seahawks. And he knows that this is Michael's former team. So you might see a little bit more of him than usual just to see if maybe that added motivation might not get him started. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, Jacob. I'll wrap it up by just saying that, you know, you got to thank Starks for his service. Obviously, he was the spark plug in 2010 that came in and really jump-started the running game and the offense and helped them go on that run to win a championship. And he was the starting running back. He was the lone tailback when they did win the Super Bowl, and he started that game. So, you know, he's been good for this team, but his drop-off has been probably most drastic and more dramatic than anybody that I can remember just off the top of my head right now in recent memory.
It's unfortunate because, you know, you see it all the time across the league. You know, a running back hits a certain age and all of a sudden just bang, he hits that wall and he's done. You know, Adrian Peterson kind of looked that way this year before his ankle or knee or whatever it was exploded on him against the Packers in the second game of the season. But even before that, Adrian Peterson did not look like Adrian Peterson. And James Starks was never Adrian Peterson. So I don't mean to compare the two there, but you know, you're talking about spark plugs for a run. You know, I'm thinking if, you know, let's just say if I can tell you the future and say Green Bay runs the table here and finds a running game, if that is going to be a storyline, I'm with you, and I said this before, obviously, I think Ty Montgomery is the guy who you're like, wow, they made a receiver a running back and he became 2010's version of James Starks. Just in 2016. That's what I think as of right now. You can just see he looks faster. He looks more decisive. He's powerful in the hole. There was a play. It was a short yardage play, and he stiff-arms Bernardrick McKinney. And Bernardrick McKinney is no slouch when it comes to linebackers. That's a big boy, and Montgomery just shoved him off him like he was a fly at a barbecue. I can't say enough good things about Ty Montgomery. I don't understand why he struggles as much as he does to stay on the field, because it's obvious to me, and I would imagine, I always say my theory is, it's obvious, if it's obvious to me, I would think it's obvious to an NFL head coach, and I think it should be obvious at this point to Mike McCarthy that his best running back is a wide receiver. And yeah, that's unfortunate, because obviously they came into the year hoping that Eddie Lacy was their guy and that James Starks could still do some things and they could get creative with Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb. You know, you talked about the Cobra package. That was something I was excited about, because you could plug Randall Cobb back there and you move Ty Montgomery, who looks good as a slot receiver last year, into the slot or vice versa, and you just have matchup problems all over the place. Now, it's less of a package and more of a staple, because, or at least should be more of a staple, because I think Montgomery's your guy. I agree with you on Michael. I like him, again, like I said, as a change of pace type. I think that he should be your second back just because of the level of futility that James Starks has displayed over the last several weeks. The story of these 2 weeks, however, was the defense, because the defense, Jason, we talked about it, 30-plus, 40 points in a couple games, and they just looked like they couldn't stop. I mean, there were times where I thought you and I could play receiver for the other team and we would go for 100 yards. And I mean, I don't know about your athletic ability because I've never seen you catch a football, but I can tell you guys, you could stick me in quicksand and there are like Vince Lombardi in his current state runs faster than I do. And I'm trying to make a joke and be funny and it's failing miserably, but I'm slow and it looks like guys like that could just run wild in the Packers secondary. And that didn't happen. I mean, I know the Philadelphia Eagles don't have any wide. If any Packers fan thinks that their wide receiver core is bad, and I'll be the first to admit, this is not 2011 when they had Greg Jennings and James Jones and Donald Driver and Jordy Nelson. And I can, you know, go down the list. That Eagles receiving core is horrible. Jordan Matthews was the only threat they had. And once he exited that game with an ankle injury, they had nothing. You know, people have gotten on Carson Wentz as far as his ability or lack of ability, rather, to take shots down the field. My question is, who do you want him to take shots down the field to? Because if the Packers don't have a deep threat, the Eagles really don't have a deep threat. And they don't even have a possession guy like Jordy Nelson or a slot guy like Randall Cobb, even in their lesser state than they were in 2014. But the Packers defense still did some good things. And it starts really with Julius Peppers, and he's having one of those runs again. He's got a sack in each of the last two games. He's playing more, which is something he wanted. It's less by design and more so out of necessity because Clay Matthews played inside linebacker in the Eagles game, and he moved around a lot in the game against the Houston Texans. But Julius Peppers, Jason, like you said, he passed Michael Strahan, and you know, you say he has one more sack than he should have. So he passed Michael Strahan in the Texans game. Realistically, should have done it in the Eagles game. But he's all over the place. He looks fresh, and he looks really good. The other thing I want to talk about, though, is Clay Matthews is clearly playing with one arm. He got a blindside block from Alan Barber, and he kind of whined about it a little bit and called it a cheap shot. I don't agree with that, but at the same time, he's clearly playing with one and a half legs. Maybe just one leg. I don't really know how bad his hamstring injury is as of this moment. And he's clearly playing with one arm. Can we finally please put to bed the he's not tough enough card? Because I think that, like I said, he is the Packers' best defensive player, most important defensive player still. Team's game plan for him. Winston Moss said today that on the Pepper sack that against the Texans that the offense was focused on Clay Matthews, and he still has that ability to make a defense game plan for him. I'm tired of hearing that Clay Matthews is soft because, yes, I know he's missed some games, and I know he's missed some time, and that's frustrating during games. But at the same time, he is doing right now exactly what some people are asking him to do, and that's play through pain. And Matthews has played through a lot of pain the last couple of years. I remember, you know, a broken thumb, leg injuries. He's just – okay, so he's not an Iron Man and he doesn't play every single game like, say, A.J. Hawk did. But he still does play through pain. It's not as if he goes into the trainer's table and they say, yeah, man, you can go. And he's like, no, my leg hurts. I can't play. When he's told he can't play, it's because he physically cannot go. I'm tired of Clay Matthews' soft thing. Jason, maybe I'm a little biased because I'll be the first to admit that Matthews is my favorite player. But can we please put this thing to bed because I'm sick of it?
Yeah, it needs to be squashed. And I would probably agree. I wear his jersey. That's the jersey. I was wearing the Hawk for the longest time, and then Matthews took over as the jersey that I wore after the Super Bowl victory in 2010. So, yeah, I mean, Clay Matthews, and I've said it on multiple occasions, he might not always have the greatest game on earth. He might sometimes run himself out of plays in the most ridiculous fashion possible for a player that is considered to be elite or at least very, very good at his position. And, yes, it's frustrating. But if he can be out there, he is going to be out there, and he's going to try to help this team. I don't think he's ever played and been a liability. Because when he's on the field, regardless of whether he's got one arm, one leg, zero legs, two arms, whatever the case may be, whatever the equation be, the offense has to know where he's at on the field because he's that good. So I get that they know opposing offenses know that he's got limitations They read the news just like we do. We saw how ineffective Matthews was at times last week, but he's practicing this week. The Packers feel like his being out on the field is an asset. For all I know, I have no idea. I mean, he said the pain injection that he was given prior to last week's game didn't help him at all. I mean, he's got a separated shoulder, people. And that's not something you can easily play with when you're taking on 200, 300-pound guys, blocking you, trying to push up against you to keep you away from the quarterback, or coming up to try to block you when you're playing in the inside at middle linebacker. So, yeah, Clay Matthews is still a huge asset to the Packers. Now, interestingly enough, one of our sister shows, Titletown Sound, did their show this week, which just went live, I think, yesterday. And they talked about Clay Matthews and what should the Packers do with Matthews when his current contract is up. I encourage you all to download that show and listen to it. It's an interesting conversation. That's a whole separate topic. You know, maybe that's when we can maybe talk about, okay, what is his value moving forward? Because like you said, Jacob, he's not an Iron Man. And that's not to bag on him. You know, the way that Matthews plays, and because he plays outside linebacker, it's a different type of pushing, shoving, leverage, bending, twisting. You know, his body just isn't necessarily made to truck through all of that 16 games a season. Then you've got a guy that you mentioned earlier in the conversation who is a genetic freak in Julius Peppers, who's been an outside linebacker or a defensive end his entire career. And he's missed, I think we can count on one hand how many games he's missed in his career and have hands left over or fingers left over. So it's part of it's luck, part of it's genetics, part of it's just the way guys play. The way Clay Matthews plays, he gets hurt and he misses some time. But if he can be out there, he's going to be out there. Let's not forget, at the end of the NFC Championship game, Clay Matthews is on the sideline trying to avoid trainers because he had a concussion, but he wanted to be able to come back in and help his team win because he knew he was an asset. He knew that he was needed, and he wanted his team to go to another Super Bowl. So anybody's questioning this guy's dedication, his toughness, his grit, you need to reassess your definition of the word because Matthews is a huge, huge asset. You talked about Peppers. You know, I'll just say about Julius Peppers, he's kind of an interesting case this season because he's been either really good or he's kind of been a ghost at times. But he's one of those where after the season, when you go back and you look at the numbers, you say, wow, I didn't realize that he had all that. And he makes an impact. You know, so I was listening to Wilde and Tausch from yesterday, and they were talking about Peppers, and the question was posed, is he worth the contract that he's being paid? Well, he's a guy that makes, I think this was Mark Tauscher's take, maybe 10 impact plays a season. So is he worth the money? Well, 10 impact plays, if you listen to Dom Capers, he'll tell you, and he has said on multiple occasions, that most football games come down to two or three plays. And that's what determines the winner and the loser. So if 10 impact plays a season means it tilts the win-loss column by two or three games, maybe even more, maybe it is. You know, he should have had a second sack on Carson Wentz. Wentz got away, and then Peppers foolishly got a face mask called against him. Otherwise, he would have had another sack in that game. So he's still able to make plays. He got Brock Osweiler using that length. You know, it was like two tall guys, you know, battling it out and leverage on leverage, and Peppers won that battle. So he's still valuable there. But, yeah, the Clay Matthews thing, like you said, Jacob, that whole thing's got to just – it's got to just end. And I'm not just being a homer there. I mean, he's done a lot for this team. And I don't know about you. Let me ask you a question. When you saw today, or maybe you didn't know, but when you heard that he was practicing already, when he wasn't expected to practice at all until Saturday – were you or were you not a little bit more encouraged about the Packers' chances this weekend against the Seahawks?
I absolutely was. I just said, you know, Clay Matthews is the Packers' best defensive player. And, you know, you want to talk about not being a homer. And, you know, I'm someone who could be easily disqualified from that as well because Clay Matthews is the jersey I wore when they won Super Bowl 45. His forced fumble of Rashard Mendenhall was my computer background for forever. And it stands as my favorite play from that Super Bowl outside of Tremont Williams breaking up that final pass. And one other thing I think that goes kind of under the radar is the fact that, you know, Clay Matthews is an outside linebacker. That is what he was drafted to be, was an edge rusher. And the Packers in 2014 moved him to the middle, and Matthews did it. He didn't complain a lot. He did complain a little bit, but not a lot. and was willing to do so again this season when they basically told him at the beginning of the year, you're an inside or an outside linebacker, and that's where we're going to keep you. He's doing what is in the best interest of the team. And, you know, you talk about Julius Peppers, you know, this is another one of those runs he's on where I'm like, man, that is a Hall of Fame player. And the Packers haven't had a guy like that on their roster really since Charles Woodson, as far as the defense goes, at least. You know, you're looking at a Hall of Fame player, and it's a guy who, yeah, he's on his last legs, but you know what, like you said, two or three plays a game. Julius Peppers makes 10 impact plays a season. You can argue that the sack against Brock Osweiler ended a drive. The sack against Carson Wentz ended a drive. I mean, Julius Peppers is on a run that's great. I couldn't be more pleased the last couple of weeks with the outside linebacker play from those two guys as far as Peppers. Maybe I could be a little more pleased with Matthews. He could be a little more effective. But at the same time, I mean, I'm watching him on pass rush reps where he's playing with one arm. He is a third down rusher through the course of the first half against the Houston Texans. So that is my general opinion on the Clay Matthews story right there. There was some bad news to go with the good news, and that is that Nick Perry has what Mike McCarthy called a significant hand injury, and that will keep him out for an unspecified amount of time. Sounds like a lot of broken fingers. He came back, was playing with a club, but he's not going to play this week against the Seahawks. Blake Martinez and Jake Ryan both kind of questionable as to how much they're going to play. We'll see what happens as far as Clay Matthews' plan goes, as far as those outside linebacker goes. Jake Ryan was in and out of the lineup against the Texans. He came in, he made a couple impact plays, and then he was out again. And it's just unfortunate, the injury situation right here. One other thing that was exciting for me, Dean Lowry, Jason, you tweeted it. Dean Lowry got his first sack. It was kind of a lookout block or a whoops, excuse me block, but Lowry kind of slips, which kind of helped him. He breaks inside, and Brock Osweiler's on the ground. So I don't care what way it's got to come. I was excited to see a kid from my hometown make a play in an NFL game for my favorite team. So that was cool. Overall, Jason, what I want to know, what are your impressions during this Packers two-game winning streak? Mine is, okay, that's great. They got back to 500, but they beat Carson Wentz, and he's a rookie who has probably hit the wall, and he doesn't have a lot as far as supporting cast goes. It was great that they lit up that Eagles defense because the Eagles defense at home was giving up like 10 points a game or something like that, and that was great to see them be able to move up and down the field. But at the same time, defensively, that's really where my worries lie as far as the Packers go. And beating Carson Wentz and his band of you and I playing wide receiver doesn't exactly inspire a ton of confidence. And then they also beat Brock Osweiler. And I feel pretty confident saying that Brock Osweiler could be the starting quarterback and effective for the Wisconsin Badgers. And for those of you that follow me on Twitter, you saw during the Big Ten championship game, I say, you know, just about every year, it's amazing to me what the Badgers are able to accomplish with what really is an elementary level passing game. That's no disrespect to Bars Houston or Alex Hornibrook or some of these guys, but really any quarterback in my lifetime for Wisconsin outside of Russell Wilson just hasn't inspired a ton of confidence for me, but that's about it. So I feel that Brock Osweiler could start over Bart Houston at Wisconsin, and that's about as far as my confidence in him goes. So yes, great. They won, you know, they're 6-6. They're back in the hunt, but I don't feel a ton of confidence in this year's team. What are your thoughts after these two games?
Well, I guess I'm, you know, finally we get your big wish, which is a little bit of dissentment, because I disagree. I think that this is, regardless of the quality of opponents, I think the way these Packers teams have worked over the past several, well, I guess really just kind of since Mike McCarthy has been a head coach, so we got a decade's worth of sample size here. Side note, we're recording this on Thursday. We're doing this show on Thursday, and a Thursday night football is on in the background. I don't have the sound on, but we're not even, what, 3 minutes into this game, and there have already been three turnovers. It's amazing. It's a typical Chiefs-Raiders matchup. So I think these Packers get on a roll, and regardless of who they beat, they kind of build on it. So, like, I remember in 2006, I think they won like their last four games in a row, maybe even their last six games in a row. I think they were 2-8, and they won their last six games to kind of finish out, or they finished the season strong to end at 8-8. And that's kind of the hallmark of a Mike McCarthy team. So I don't think the quality of opponent, I agree with you, Jacob, the Eagles and the Texans, when you step back and look at them, they're not juggernauts by any means. These aren't statement victories. You want a statement win, it's going to be this weekend against Seattle if they can get one, even though it is at Lambeau Field. The Packers actually, for the first time since, what I don't even remember what it was now off the top of my head. I read it earlier today, but they're an underdog at home for the first time in a very, very long time. So that's a statement win there, I think, and that's going to be huge if they can get a victory. But I think these last couple games are going to do good things for that locker room because they just needed to get off the schneid. They just needed to get the taste of victory back in their mouth and realize that they can accomplish some things. Yes, our offense can click. Yes, our defense can get a stop. Yes, our young guys can make plays. Yes, we can have splash plays. Our playmakers can show up. You know, sometimes, you know, like they say with a young quarterback, you know, give him a couple quick easy passes to get the jitters out and get it, you know, kind of get his footing back under him. And I think that's what these last couple of wins have done for the Packers. We'll find out on Sunday and how they look. If they come out and put up another stinker and they get boat raced by a Seattle team, you know, that's now missing Earl Thomas, which is one of their spiritual leaders, and that's, you know, as much as his physical play will be missed, he's also a big key to them emotionally. But if they overcome that and still put up a huge performance on the road against the Packers team that has played well there in December, then maybe, Jacob, you got a little bit more juice to your side of the argument. But, you know, going back to the whole Nick Perry thing, I did want to say, you know, Nick blank Perry, we all know what that stands for in your particular heart, but here's the Nick Perry that we all know and love. And no, Jacob, you're right, it is not a good thing. So Nick Perry's been available. He's been playing for the Packers. He's played an entire season. He's having one of his better years. He's tapered off a little bit since Clay Matthews had that stint where he was out. Perry wasn't as effective because he was getting more attention from opposing offensive lines. He was getting blocked, double-teamed, had a hard time fighting through that. He's a great run defender. But here we go. Nick Perry's hurt, and he's going to miss some time. He tried to come back out and put the club on. Didn't work. He's going to miss this week. He had surgery, actually, on his hand, so he can potentially try to return if the Packers make the postseason, but there's still some talk that his season may be over. He broke multiple bones in his hand. That happened early in the Texans game, so sure enough, here we are. Nick Perry's missing time, where usually in the past he's already missed his time. That happens kind of early to middle of the season. And then he's there for the stretch run. Like last year, he had that huge game against Washington in the wild card playoff game. Now they're going to probably have to go into the postseason if they make it and go on this stretch run of these last four games without one of their best defensive players all season. So, you know, once again, the narrative on Nick Perry unable to stay healthy and that he doesn't play a full season, he's got injury issues, rears its ugly head and possibly at one of the worst times. So it was good to see Lowry get his sack. Those two inside linebackers, I've got my eye on their availability because even if Jake Ryan is still dealing with that ankle, he's proven to be kind of an important piece to that defense. And if he's on the field, Joe Thomas doesn't have to be on the field as much. Joe Thomas playing regular snaps at inside linebacker is not what you want, Jacob, to borrow your phrase, when it's a situation that's not necessarily ideal. And if Blake Martinez is able to come back and play at all, I think that's going to help with the versatility. I think that gives the Packers a little bit more depth if Matthews is hindered, not himself, or, you know, worst-case scenario, doesn't play. But getting back to the original question, I think they've got something to build off of here with these two victories because it's still NFL teams, and they still had to get a big win on the road and then prove that they could win at home. You've got some favorable weather conditions coming up in the sense that the Packers just played in it last week, so they're going to be a little bit more accustomed to what they need to do to battle through the snow. Seattle's going to have to probably get their footing, get used to the field, maybe change cleats, all those kind of things kind of all factor into it. So there's reason for optimism, I think.
Well, you mentioned the next opponent, and let me get it on record right now. I hate the Seattle Seahawks. And, yes, it 100% has to do with what happened on that fateful day, January 19th, 2015. Well, I guess not everything, but couple that in with the Fail Mary, and I don't like them, guys. I don't have a better way to put that. I hate them. I hate them. I got nothing better to say than that. You know, Jason, you were talking about them being a home underdog. They're a home underdog for the first time since they played the Cowboys in 2000, 2009, which I affectionately refer to as Charles Woodson's coming out party, of him saying, "I'm the defensive player of the year." He had a forced fumble in that game, an interception. He was just all over the place that day. The Packers won that game 17-7. Reality is, the Packers need to win this game. They're 6-6, and Detroit is 8-4. They look like the team that the Packers are going to be chasing in the NFC North. The Lions got a big win in New Orleans against the Saints, and a loss with a Detroit win against Chicago at home, which you would imagine Detroit should win that game, puts the Packers behind the Lions, three games behind the Lions, with three games to play. Now, that doesn't completely end their playoff hopes, but it puts them in the dumb and dumber, so you're saying there's a chance kind of category. So I asked Jason, is what are you expecting on Sunday? And for me, I'm expecting a closer game than what most casual fans will probably tell you. I think at this point, a lot of fans of other teams have kind of figured out that the Packers are not the Packers they've become accustomed to, and the Seahawks kind of have this glow about them as a Super Bowl contender, and rightfully so. But at the same time, they had every reason to fold up the 10 after they went 4-6. They had every reason to go into Philadelphia, get blown out, and end their season, and they didn't. They won two games in a row, and they have a sense of pride of playing at home under Mike McCarthy. They always have. Earl Thomas being out certainly helps them. So I'm expecting a close-fought battle between two teams that are typically NFC Titans. And I think, you know, the Seahawks are a team. They talk about the Packers in a big glow. And they've kind of had Green Bay's number as far as bigger games go. But at the same time, you know, I know they probably don't like Green Bay very much either. And I expect the Packers obviously don't like them for what has happened to them playing against the Seahawks. So I think this is going to be a good game. I think it'll be highly emotional and chippy. Maybe you might even see a fight or a penalty breakout because of that. That kind of makes you roll your eyes. But that, to me, is just what this kind of game might be. But I expect this game to be closer than what you're kind of expecting. And, Jason, actually, before we move on to break down this game, I forget this every week. We got to go through our Adam Check Ticket Kings of the game in the last 2 weeks. Philadelphia Eagles, I'm going with Devontae Adams. I mentioned his catch for a touchdown. He was just great throughout the night. Fantastic season so far from Devontae Adams, much more than you would have expected after the Packers broke camp in September. And then the Texans game, I don't see how you can go anywhere else but Jordy Nelson. He was just phenomenal throughout the day. So those are my two Adam Check Ticket Kings of the game. So, Jason, who are your Ticket Kings of the last two games, and what are you expecting when they take on the Seahawks this Sunday at Lambeau Field?
Okay, so Adam Check Ticket Kings of the game. I'll go with some different guys. So I'm going to go with Julius Peppers for tying/surpassing Michael Strahan on the all-time sack list against the Eagles. And I'm going to go LaDarius Gunter last week for stepping up and drawing a pretty tough assignment against DeAndre Hopkins at times, even though the conditions kind of helped him a bit with Hopkins and he didn't make a ton of plays except for that one touchdown that he had, which apparently there was a push-off on. I don't know. I mean, but Gunter played a pretty good game. So if he can do that down the stretch, he's no Tremont Williams, who was another undrafted free agent cornerback who rose to stardom and help propel the Packers to a championship. But if he can play that well down the stretch and be consistent with it, I think it lessens the blow of not having Sam Shields out there, and they're obviously very far from the same player, but still that secondary misses Sam Shields. So those are my two Ticket Kings of the game. As far as Sunday goes, it's ironic that you mentioned the 2009, and I remember that Cowboys game because I remember I was sitting at a bar watching it, and this was before my writing and podcasting days. I'm sitting at a bar watching that game, and I was just waiting for the collapse to happen because it was just too close. Nobody was scoring. It was a tight game. It was a very low-scoring game. Tony Romo, and you've got Charles Woodson playing out of his mind. And we talked about Clay Matthews and his toughness and his contributions to the Packers, and you said it was Charles coming out like, "I'm the defensive player of the year," and he definitely was. He had a great game that day. He had a strip sack of Tony Romo, and he started beating on his chest like Tarzan. And the ball was loose. He had caused the fumble. And there's Woodson celebrating, and who falls on the ball and is Johnny on the spot with just the energy of a child, but rookie outside linebacker Clay Matthews, who had also a big game, and that was one of the games that kind of turned him into, in my mind, the guy that he is today, that dependable guy that's able to make big splash plays. But, you know, Seattle – I kind of didn't know what to do with this game. And yes, I am going to the game, and actually it's kind of funny, Jacob. I'm actually going to this one solo. Kelsey and JJ are on their way to Florida. So JJ's going to be at Disney this upcoming weekend, and he's 3.5 going on 4, so he isn't quite, I don't ever want to miss a Packers game. And he's actually getting to the age now where I think we can probably start thinking about taking him to his first game at Lambeau Field, which would definitely be a huge, huge thing. And I think Uncle Jacob might have to go to that game as well, but that's another topic for another day. So obviously I want to see him win. I'm kind of biased that way, but I reached out to Adam's wife, Juliana, the other day. And I just said, I'm having a really hard time picking this game because it's at Lambeau Field. It's home. All of the history is on Green Bay's side. The point spread is on Seattle's side. Seattle's the better team right now. The Packers have won 2 in a row, though. Seattle just lost Earl Thomas. I'm going back and forth, and I was like, I texted her, and I just said, what would Adam have said? What would Adam be saying about this game? And she said, that's a really good question. And she said that he had mentioned to her right before he passed that he felt like the Packers were going to go on a run. So that was all I needed to hear right there. I'm like, that's it. I'm going to this game, you know, upbeat lollipop, all these things kind of filtered into one. I'm picking the Packers. I'm picking the Packers to win this game. So I expected, you know, you say it's going to be close. Obviously, I say it's going to be close too because I'm picking Green Bay to win this game. Spoiler alert. And I think that with the field conditions and the confidence the Packers are playing with, and like I said, historically, Mike McCarthy comes up with these amazing game plans and games where you just all of a sudden it's like, whoa, where did that come from? And we have talked about it. I feel like, Jacob, we refer back to this game at least once a week. For some reason, the Patriots game in 14, we were both in the house. They came up with a brilliant game plan that day, and they beat the New England Patriots soundly and probably should have been a preview of the Super Bowl that season. We all know how it ended. So I expect the Packers to play with a lot of energy, to take this game as seriously as they can. You know what? It may come down to a couple of tough plays with slippery conditions, and the Seahawks are very opportunistic, so maybe a couple turnovers thwarts the effort. But that's what I'm going with. I think it's going to come down to, and this will kind of parlay into, I think, our next point, which is, you know, Seahawks player that's most concerning. It's going to come down to how the Packers defend Jimmy Graham, because here's a big tight end. The Packers have struggled with tight ends, and he is playing very, very well in that offense. He has found his niche in that offense, and that is not good news for the Green Bay Packers, who have a hard time with tight ends. They figure that out, I think they've got a great chance to win.
Well, you just mentioned your players, Jimmy Graham. Mine is Tyler Lockett, wide receiver out of Kansas State. I loved him going into that draft, first of all. But mostly because, you know, you're mentioning types of players the Packers tend to struggle with. This just reeks of a game where Tyler Lockett's primary matchup is Micah Hyde, and Micah Hyde gets roasted, and Tyler Lockett is running wild. He has the potential to do things in the return game. He just is the type of player that gives the Packers fits, and it seems to be the type that gives a big day for him. But, Jason, you know, you mentioned – you feel a little bit better about it because it's an offensive player for the Seahawks, and the Seahawks' offense is less than ideal. Their offensive line is terrible. This should be a good week for the Packers front seven. The biggest worry that I have from that specific matchup is Russell Wilson's ability outside of the pocket, because I think Wilson's going to have, with Matthews and Peppers and Mike Daniels and Dayton Jones this week with a big opportunity, I'm expecting Russell Wilson to be able to make some plays outside the pocket. And I tend to think a guy like Tyler Lockett is the guy he could be looking for. But again, you know, I just tell you, this is the guy that it looks like a guy that's going to be covered by Micah Hyde. And my opinion on Micah Hyde is pretty well documented. I think he's an average football player at best. He lacks top end speed. He lacks lateral quickness, and Tyler Lockett has both of those things. So my player for that is, who scares me the most is Tyler Lockett. And Jason, you said yours is Jimmy Graham. And that is fair, which you kind of spoiled the last segment of the show, but that is a game pick. Jason, I will let you give your reasoning first. Who are you picking, Green Bay or Seattle?
Yeah, spoiled it. I do that at least once a week. I don't know. This is why they don't let me host the show. This is why you have to take the reins, Jacob, because you can't trust me with nice things. You know, this is why we can't have nice things, because of Jason. So Yeah, I'm picking the Packers. I don't really have a score in mind. It's going to be Packers, more points, Seattle, not as many. Whether that's 14, 13, 3 to nothing, I mean, the Seahawks are ripe for those really low-scoring games. I mean, for crying out loud, they had a 6-6 tie this season. So I have no idea what the final score is going to be. But I kind of already went through my rationale. I just think Green Bay is a little bit more accustomed to what they're going to be dealing with on the field. The weather conditions are going to be similar to what they were this past week against Houston, although this is a late afternoon start, so the temperature is going to drop. It's going to be a little bit cooler. It might be a little more, little windier. But it's supposed to snow. There's going to be some white stuff on the ground, so Packers are going to be a little bit more up on dealing with that. I think they're going to come out with a lot of energy. I think Seattle will as well, too. I mean, you got some very spiritual leaders on that team. Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson, Cam Chancellor. They want to come up. They want to show well for Earl Thomas, and they don't want to lose any ground. I mean, they've got an opportunity to do something special, and they know that every year they don't get it done is another year of window of opportunity that they've missed. And Packers fans know all about that because we've got a quarterback here that we're hoping we can get another championship with before he is done playing, which is not going to be anytime too incredibly soon. But I think it's going to come down to the game plan, Green Bay's energy level, and I just have to hope that they have a game plan for Jimmy Graham. And like you said, Jacob, it does not come down to Micah Hyde being involved in that, because if he is, forget it. You can take everything I'm saying and toss it out the window. But in honor of my fallen friend, Adam Cech, I'm picking the Green Bay Packers to beat the Seattle Seahawks, probably against my better judgment, but it feels right for all the right reasons.
And here is where the show takes a twist, because Jason, in the outline that I sent you, I said I was picking the Seattle Seahawks to win this game. And I said closer game, and I said about 27-20 Seattle. However, recent events and recent conversation has changed my tune. You're talking about, you know, a fallen friend of ours and Adam Cech. For those of you that don't know, my full-time job when I'm not doing this is I work as an activities director in a nursing home. And one of my good friend's grandparents actually was admitted to the home in October. And we used to talk, his grandfather and I, about, you know, how things I used to do with his grandson or things that I do with his grandson. His grandson actually went to the Texans game with me last week. We tailgated. It was a great time. And, you know, Bob used to tell me that he was a Packers fan, and, you know, he wished that he could go with me and Mike. And, you know, he's starting to decline a little bit, but he could get a little bit out and I could understand him a little bit. But not as much as I used to be able to. And he actually passed away last night at about 11 o'clock. And because of that, I think that my opinion, I don't think, I know my opinion has changed. And I, too, am picking the Green Bay Packers in inspiration of my friend Bob. You know, I looked at him. He was in good spirits a couple days ago. Yesterday, not so much, before he ultimately did pass on. But in honor of Bob and in honor of my friend Mike, I'm picking the Packers as well. I don't really have a score prediction for you, I guess. You know, if you want me to give you one on the spot, I'll say 24-21, Green Bay wins at home. They do just enough on defense and just enough on offense to pull out a win, put them at 7-6 before the stretch run where they play Chicago on the road, Minnesota at home, and then Detroit on the road to close out the season in a game that could be for the NFC North's crown. So I am taking Green Bay to beat Seattle in honor of my good friend. So, Jason, you and I, similar reasons, different people, but the same prediction. We both like Green Bay to win, and that will do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can also give us an ad on Snapchat. We are Packer Pulse for that as well. We haven't done so well with that in recent weeks because of some busy nature of our lives, but we are going to pick back up on that. You can check us on Sunday. I'll give you some points of the game at halftime. Jason, you and I can both do some stuff once the game ends, but we'll be there for that. Want to thank our sponsors, Ticket King. Like I said, I passed it last week on the way to the stadium. It's right down the street. Go in, pick up your tickets, come on inside the stadium with me or Jason this week and cheer on the Pack. And one other thing, Jason, is I am not capable to go to the game this week. I've got some, let's call them minor health issues, I guess. There's some issues with migraines and such that make it really difficult for me to be in a public venue like that. So I actually had to turn down my chances to go to the last two games of the season this year. But I am there in spirit because I know you will be there. And I also know that when we are in the stadium at the same time, the Packers have not lost. They beat the New England Patriots 2 years ago. Like we mentioned, they beat the Kansas City Chiefs last year. So there is another, maybe not on the field reason, but another reason I like Green Bay to win this week. So there is that as well. We both like Green Bay to win this week. Also, one more thing. I'm kind of going back and forth here, so forgive me with that. But as far as Ticket King goes, Adam checks Ticket King of the game. Jason and I will have one for you every single week. I had Devontae Adams and Jordy Nelson. Jason had Julius Peppers and Ladarius Gunter for the Eagles and the Texans game, respectively. But want to thank everybody for listening to the show because, as I say, almost every week, or at least try to, without you guys, there's really no purpose for us to do this show. So we thank you for listening to our opinions. Tell us how terrible we are. Let us know through Twitter, Snapchat, whatever. I mentioned the Packer Pulse Twitter. You can also follow me personally. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. Thank you guys, as always. Enjoy the game Sunday. Cheer really hard, whether you're at home, on your couch like I am, or in the stadium like Jason will be. Get loud. Let's go get the Packers a win this week and get them back to 7-6 above 500 and ready for a stretch run, hopefully into the playoffs. Thank you for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.